Rapid Fire, The Jewel of 7 Mile Island. Post restores Jersey Shore landmark to new life of service, by R.C. Staub. In the early 2000s, Stephen C. Ludlam, American Legion Post 331, in Stone Harbor, New Jersey, faced a crisis. It needed to fix a failing roof and remove asbestos from siding on its building. But the post didn't have a large reserve or annual revenues to cover the anticipated expenses. Consideration was given to selling the building, a former U.S. life-saving service station built in 1895. But then Post 331 Commander Bill Keenan had a vision of connecting the 21st century service mission of the post to the mission of life-saving service surfmen from the 19th century, who rescued people and cargo from wrecks in the turbulent Atlantic. The journey to discover the building's history has enlivened the post as an important cultural and historic asset to the communities of Stone Harbor and neighboring Avalon. Today, Post Commander Tim McCullough refers to the building as the Jewel of 7 Mile Island and of the Legion's Department of New Jersey. Created in 1849, the life-saving service was initially an all-volunteer agency working out of small boathouses. In 1871, the Treasury Department persuaded Congress to increase spending, to hire full-time staff, and build new stations that could accommodate larger boats, more equipment, staff lodging, and rooms for rescued people who needed a place to stay before continuing their journeys. In the 1890s, the government paid $600 to the 7 Mile Beach Company to lease the land to build the station that would become Post 331. By the end of the century, hundreds of life-saving service buildings dotted the East Coast, West Coast, and Great Lakes. From 1871 to 1914, the service aided 28,121 vessels and rescued or aided 178,741 people. Its unofficial motto, remember, you have to go out, but nothing says you have to come back. In 1915, the service was merged with the Revenue Cutter Service to create the U.S. Coast Guard, which over time had little use for stations such as Stone Harbor, blocks from the beach with no direct bay or river access for motorized boats. In 1948, the U.S. government abandoned the station and, per the lease, returned ownership to the 7 Mile Beach Company. In turn, the surviving board member sold the property to the recently formed Post 331. The price was $1 for land that 50 years later would become prime real estate in an affluent beach community. For many years, when Stone Harbor was a sleepy beach town, Post 331 was its social center, especially on Saturday nights, according to Post historian Dick Pike. Putting aside thoughts of selling the building, Keenan worked with Post members Pike, Bill Lehman, Kevin Coyle, and John Reddy to uncover the history of the surfmen of Stone Harbor. In 2006, we invited the mayor and writers to come see the building, Pike said. That's when we came up with the idea of the building being one of Stone Harbor's treasures. To raise funds, the Post leadership sold more than 2,000 hats, 700 pavers, and promoted 50-50 raffles, with all the proceeds going to repairs. From Cape May County, they applied for and received historic and art grants to collect artifacts and pay for murals painted on the rebuilt frontage. With the state's help, the building was listed on the New Jersey and National Registers of Historic Places. The dig into history was revealing for everyone, Pike said. The biggest connection between the Post and its history as a life-saving service station has been that we have a lot of respect for them and the things they had to do to save people. They got paid only $50 a month during the winter months. If you're going out on a mission to give up your life, a couple of dollars is not a lot to have. Today, when the boat doors are open, murals painted by Post member J.J. Thompson depict men racing out to the ocean in harsh weather to save lives with surf boats, and a beach cart with lines and life-saving apparatus. Another past historian, Art Feint, recounted a fascinating connection that bridges centuries of service. Richard C. Holmes, from nearby Cape May, was appointed in 1876 as keeper of the Tatum Life-Saving Service Station on Seven Mile Beach, a predecessor to the current building. Holmes' daughter married Frank Ebelhare, who served in World War I. Ebelhare became the interim commander of Post 331, while local veterans were petitioning for a charter. Frank's daughter, Emma Ebelhare Kemley, later became commander, the first female post commander in New Jersey. Sons of the American Legion Squad 331 claims her late son, Ronald, a New York City firefighter. His son, Ronald Jr., followed in his footsteps. Both were called to serve when the towers fell on 9/11. There was much to be done with rebuilding, Pike said, and to help, the local people gave a lot of money. From each borough, we received $100,000. We had a lot of support once they saw we were trying to make this into a historic place people could come and see. This has allowed the Post to concentrate on giving to veterans' causes and the community. I am proud to say that in each of the last 5 years, we have given $50,000 to $70,000 to veterans less fortunate than we are, and to youth Americanism projects and programs, McCullough said. Free tours are available throughout the week during the busy beach season, between Flag Day and Labor Day. Even though the building is not considered a lighthouse, it attracts about 3,000 tourists during a fall weekend for the Lighthouse Challenge of New Jersey. Even so, on an island with only about 2,000 permanent residents, Post members are concerned about the building's future. Coyle, another past Post commander, said, "I think it will become a multicultural center, a senior citizen center, a museum, a place for Civil War reenactors, and the Post." "We'd never want the building to be torn down," Reddy said. "We have full commitment from the boroughs of Stone Harbor and Avalon not to let that happen." R.C. Staub is an author and travel writer based in New York, New Jersey, and Florida. He writes extensively about the Jersey Shore from Cape May to Sandy Hook. On Point, the American Legion in Washington. H.R. 2693, Pay Our Coast Guard Parity Act. During the previous shutdown, as Congress sat idle, only the Coast Guard was not paid because they are funded through Homeland Security. Almost 5 years later, we find ourselves in a similar grim scenario. American Legion National Commander Dan Seehafer, in a September e-newsletter message to nearly 1 million subscribers. The Department of Homeland Security, not the Department of Defense, oversees the Coast Guard. This means that during government shutdowns, Coasties are the only members of the U.S. Armed Forces who go without pay. That does not mean their responsibilities to provide law enforcement, port security, maritime and coast safety, drug interdictions, and military support are suspended. They are simply conducted without pay, while too often operating outdated equipment and vessels. The American Legion calls upon Congress and the administration to understand the Coast Guard's vital mission to provide national security by passing H.R. 2693, the Pay Our Coast Guard Parity Act of 2023, which would set aside funds for Coast Guard pay in the event an Appropriations Act expires, providing the same protection for personnel that the other branches have. 50,000-plus members of the Coast Guard who perform vital national security missions worldwide. 259 Coast Guard cutters now in use. 200 Coast Guard aircraft now in use. 1,600-plus Coast Guard boats, and other vessels. Authority to support the Pay Our Coast Guard Parity Act comes from Resolution 16, Coast Guard Pay Discrimination, passed at the 2019 American Legion National Convention. The American Legion Grassroots Action Center provides a quick, efficient way to deliver messages of support for the Pay Our Coast Guard Parity Act to members of Congress. Scan this QR code with the camera on your smartphone or go to legion.org/legislative and click the Grassroots Action Center box. Lessons from the drone war. General Christopher Cavoli, double-hatted as commander of U.S. European Command and NATO Supreme Allied Commander, reports that one-way attack drones have delivered huge results on the battlefield. Cheap and hard to detect, a small attack drone gives people a feeling of insecurity on the other side. Cavoli said, "It's not just that you got hit with the drone, it's that you kind of didn't hear it coming. And every time you hear a buzzing sound in the air, it fills you with dread, leaving behind a paralytic effect." As Stars and Stripes concludes in its report on Cavoli's remarks, the war in Ukraine is showing how small investments in cheap drones can have an outsized effect on the battlefield. Congress reaffirms support for NATO. Congress has approved legislation that would prevent any president from withdrawing the United States from NATO without approval from the Senate or an act of Congress, The Hill reports. NATO has held strong in response to Putin's war in Ukraine and rising challenges around the world, said Senator Tom Kaine, Democrat, Virginia, the measure's co-sponsor. He emphasized that the legislation reaffirms U.S. support for this crucial alliance that is foundational for our national security. Kaine's fellow co-sponsor, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican, Florida, added, "We must ensure we are protecting our national interests and protecting the security of our Democratic allies." Caption: American Legion National Commander Dan Seehafer addresses the 16th Student Veterans of America National Conference. End of caption. VA to student veterans, file those claims. The Department of Veterans Affairs, VA, could not have been more visible in Nashville, Tennessee, for the 16th Student Veterans of America, SVA, National Conference, January 4th to the 6th. No fewer than 10 booths in the exhibit hall were staffed with representatives, each offering information about a distinct arm of VA: readjustment counseling, benefits, minority and women's services, mental health, suicide prevention, and spouse talent engagement, to name a few. Claims specialists, assisted by accredited American Legion service officers, helped veterans file for VA benefits in a 3-day clinic that served hundreds. Breakout sessions hit on VA-led topics that ranged from fraud prevention to new approaches in healthcare. A mobile VA vet center was parked outside the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center to provide personal support, and VA Secretary Dennis McDonough delivered a clear message to about 2,000 student veterans from across the country: file those claims. McDonough and American Legion National Commander Dan Seehafer were among the main stage speakers in a general session focusing on government affairs. Seehafer used that platform to let student veterans using federal education benefits today know that despite a long history of success since the GI Bill was first drafted and pushed to passage by the American Legion in 1944, more work must be done, especially in the area of equal value for National Guard and Reserve veterans who, like their active duty counterparts, sacrifice and risk their lives in service to our nation, too. McDonough told students that more than 5 million veterans were screened through 2023 for conditions related to toxic contamination, now recognized as service-connected through the PACT Act, which passed in August 2022 after strong support from the American Legion. He said more than 1.3 million veterans had filed for VA disability benefits, but we've got a lot of work left to do, especially with the cohort of vets you all represent, the post-9/11 vets. Younger vets trust VA less than your older counterparts, and you're applying for benefits and care at lower rates. That could be for a number of reasons. It could be that we lost your trust. It could be that you want to not take something from your battle buddy. Let me tell you, the most important thing you might be able to do for your battle buddy is to file your story in a claim, because the more we know about you and your service, the more we know about the people deployed with you. So please, file those claims. He also encouraged SVA members to consider careers at VA after college. There is no more noble mission than ours, caring for America's veterans, their caregivers and survivors. We want you at VA. We need you at VA. American Legion National Headquarters staff shared the organization's Be the One message in a booth at the conference and participated in panel discussions at breakout sessions. Visit legion.org for a full report on the Legion's presence at the conference. Bergman and Moore, Camp Lejeune Justice Act. Update, additional FAQs on CLJA. The American Legion continues to monitor CLJA claims to ensure its members remain abreast of any news related to litigation involving individuals suffering from toxic water exposure at Camp Lejeune. As of mid-January, Track 1, Discovery, information gathering by both sides, is underway and will end March 4th. Claimants' expert witnesses must be identified by April 3rd. The government must disclose their expert witnesses by May 3rd. The government has produced hundreds of thousands of documents that are being reviewed by claimants' counsel. Track 1 relates to actions involving individuals who allege they contracted any of the following illnesses: 1. Bladder cancer. 2. Kidney cancer. 3. Leukemia. 4. Parkinson's disease. Or 5. Non-Hodgkin's lymphomas as a result of exposure to the water at Camp Lejeune. A class of Track 2 claims, a second group of cancers disabilities, has been submitted by both the claimant's side and the government, which as of January had yet to be ruled on by the court. The American Legion will continue to provide updates as additional information becomes available. In the interim, here are answers to some frequently asked questions. What is the deadline to file a claim under the Camp Lejeune Justice Act? The time frame to file a claim is limited. All claimants must file an administrative claim before August 10, 2024. For what damages may claimants be compensated? Those exposed to and injured by contaminated water at Camp Lejeune may recover for the following damages: pain and suffering, lost wages, loss of companionship, consortium, enjoyment of life and earning capacity, medical bills, permanent disability, other compensatory damages. What documents are needed to file a Camp Lejeune water contamination lawsuit? Documents proving residence at Lejeune, military service records indicating dates and locations served, medical records and diagnoses. Other documents that may be helpful include medical bills, travel records, health care information, records on disability benefits or VA compensation benefits. Bergman and Moore has been selected by the American Legion and the American Legion Auxiliary to assist their members in filing CLJA claims. Claimants who believe they were exposed to toxic water at Camp Lejeune may speak to someone personally by calling 800-898-9450 or by filling out the form online at camplejeunelitigationteam.com/AL. Callers are encouraged to mention the Legion when they call. If you have questions before filing a claim, call retired Marine Anita Best, Bergman and Moore's CLJA spokesperson, at 301-290-3148. The firm Beasley, Allen, Bergman, and Moore's co-counsel serves on the plaintiff's executive committee for the CLJA litigation. Contrary to popular belief, the brand name SPAM is not an acronym for scientifically processed animal matter or shoulder of pork and ham, but a combination of spice and ham. What will you do with your unspent retirement savings? Michael and Kelly, these names are representative and may or may not be of actual donors, are retired engineers with two adult children. They own a home, some stocks, and IRAs. They met with their financial advisor to discuss a plan to provide for their family and some of their favorite charities. "We both had a lot of money in our IRAs, more than we could ever use," Kelly said. "We wondered if we could pass this on to our children." The couple's advisor created a plan that stipulated their stocks and home would go to the children. He then recommended that a bequest of the retirement assets be left to their favorite charities. These charitable organizations could then receive all the assets from Michael's and Kelly's IRAs tax-free, allowing them to use the funds to further their missions. "This plan met all of our goals," Kelly said. "We liked the fact that our children could immediately sell the house and stocks with little or no tax due. We were also happy to help some worthy organizations continue their good work. Your retirement plan is probably among your most valuable assets, but one that may not be the best to leave to children. If you have a taxable estate, your IRA or 401k plan will be subject to the estate tax, and any distributions to children also will be subject to income tax. But leaving retirement plans to charity will produce an estate tax deduction, and the charity will not have to pay income tax on the gift." For questions about estate planning, contact the American Legion's Office of Charitable Giving at 317-630-1225, planned giving@legion.org, or visit legion.giftlegacy.com. France trained 7,000 Ukrainian troops in 2023, and overall, the European Union trained 35,000 by the end of 2023. All but three of the EU's 27 member countries, plus non-member Norway, have provided training courses or instructors, AP reports. In addition, Britain trained 30,000 Ukrainian troops in 2023 and late 2022, and the United States trained an estimated 18,000 troops. Caption: then Marine Corps Commandant General Robert Neller speaks to the Naval Academy football team in 2016. End of caption. From Navy football to the Marine Corps. A strikingly large portion of the Naval Academy's football team chooses to pursue military service in the Marine Corps, Military Times reports. Citing Academy data, the military-focused media outlet notes that since 2014, 46% of the players have become Marines, compared to only 25% to 30% of midshipmen overall. Marine Corps Captain Adam West, a former Navy Offensive Guard and 2017 graduate of the Naval Academy, connects the Corps' methods with the ways of the gridiron. "I don't want to compare football to real-life combat operations," he told Military Times, "but a lot of the Marine Corps' mission is hands-on, imposing your will on someone directly." 10 of the 25 football players in the class of 2024 have chosen Marine Corps assignments, according to the report. Convention Color Guard Band Contest Applications Open. American Legion bands and color guards can apply to compete at the 105th National Convention in New Orleans. The National Color Guard Contest will take place Friday, August 23rd at 4 p.m. in Hall D, first floor of the New Orleans Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, with Newport Harbor Post 291 of Newport Beach, California, defending its title as champion. There are five classes of competition: advancing retiring colors, military, Military Open, Open, and JROTC drill. To be considered for the National Commander's Color Guard, units must compete in either military or military open and advancing retiring colors. Units can represent any part of the Legion family or have a combination of members in the unit. Applications are due by July 26th. On Saturday, August 24th, the American Legion National Concert Band Contest will kick off at 1 p.m. in the New Orleans Theater on the second floor of the Convention Center. The event includes the concert band and exhibition concert band classes. Applications are due April 26th. All contest applications are available at legion.org/convention/contests. 25% increase in defense spending by Russia's Duma, or legislature, for this year. As military.com reports, defense spending is expected to overtake social spending for the first time in modern Russian history. Richard Connolly of the Royal United Services Institute in Britain says Russia's new budget amounts to the wholesome remilitarization of Russian society. Without improving its internal processes, USDA cannot report reliable information to Congress or the public about where and how much U.S. agricultural land is held by foreign persons. A Government Accountability Office, GAO, report that reveals China and other foreign buyers are purchasing more U.S. farmland, though just how much is difficult to determine. Foreign ownership and investment in property such as farmland, pastures, and forests jumped to about 40 million acres in 2021, up 40% from 2016, according to the Department of Agriculture. But the GAO analysis found mistakes in USDA's data, including the largest land holding linked with China being counted twice. Other issues include the challenge of enforcing a U.S. law that requires foreigners to self-report such purchases, the report said. My GI Bill, Veterans and Education by Valerie Vigil. Purple Heart Benefits for Dependents. Question. I am an Army veteran who retired in 2014. My son is planning on enrolling at the University of Arizona this fall. I would like to transfer my post-9/11 Chapter 33 education benefits to him, but I am told I cannot since I am no longer on active duty. Is this true? I received a Purple Heart. Are there any benefits from that available to my son? Answer. According to the Department of Defense, transfer requests for Chapter 33 benefits can be submitted and approved only while on active duty. However, since you are a Purple Heart recipient and reside in Arizona, your son may qualify for tuition-free education at any public state university or community college. He must be younger than 30 and unmarried, and you must have a VA disability rating of 50% or more. Other states have similar benefits. Contact your state's Department of Veterans Services for more information. Valerie Vigil is a Marine Corps veteran and member of American Legion Post 27 in Apache Junction, Arizona. Ask VALERIE at legion.org. Focus on Finances by J.J. Montanaro. Is your life in your employer's hands? Inflation, global turmoil, and general uncertainty have us all considering a more defensive financial posture, of which insurance is a key element. At its core, insurance is about transferring risk associated with losses you can't afford. In that context, why would you depend entirely on your employer for life insurance? According to Forbes, that's the case for about a quarter of Americans. If most or all of your life insurance is tied to your employment, here are four questions you should ask yourself. What happens to your coverage when you leave? In December, a Go Banking Rates survey reported that nearly 60% of U.S. workers are planning a major job change in 2024. While life insurance is probably not a primary factor for those potential job movers, it should be part of the calculus. Why? Some employer plans aren't portable, while others can be continued only by converting to a more expensive policy. Dig into the details of your employer's coverage and prospective employers to help ensure you don't inadvertently create a coverage gap. How would you replace it? Don't assume a new employer will provide what you need as part of your new benefits package. Furthermore, you might not be as healthy as you once were. Health could affect your ability to buy coverage on your own, or additional coverage beyond the base your employer offers. Is it enough? Free employer coverage, typically one or two times your salary, is often well below what your family needs. Putting a pen to paper, using a needs calculator, or even using a rule of thumb like USAA's, enough coverage to pay off all your debt and replace 5 years of income is a worthwhile exercise. Are you paying too much? Yes, free would be an indicator you are not. But beyond the employer-provided baseline, those group rates aren't always a good deal. You may pay less by getting a policy of your own, especially if you are healthy. Life insurance is much too important to be left to the whims of your employer or the possibility you'll change jobs on your own. Based on countless survey responses, a private policy will probably cost a lot less than you think. So skip renting and make the decision to own an individual life insurance policy that's yours no matter what. J.J. Montanaro is a certified financial planner with USAA, the American Legion's preferred provider of financial services. Legion.org/USAA. Laser protective eyewear for pilots. A German firm has developed special goggles to protect pilots' eyes from laser attack. As National Defense reports, ESG, Electronic System und Logistik GmbH's Visarion laser protection glasses have 6 ultra-thin layers of protective film and 96 different shapes to accommodate the different needs and dimensions of aircraft operators. The Federal Aviation Administration in 2021 reported some 9,700 incidents in the United States alone, where someone aimed a laser at military or commercial pilots in their cockpits, according to the magazine. That can not only temporarily disorient a pilot, it can cause permanent damage to their eyes. The first batches of laser protective goggles are being delivered to pilots of German military helicopters.